You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves. For your custom scarves for your group, team, or just yourself, head on over to roughneckscarves.com. It is Monday, September 30th, 2019. My good friend Daniel Sperry, we are recording this the day after the penultimate weekend of the 2019 Major League Soccer season, and just 6 days prior to decision day. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. It's still warm. It's super weird. Sorry. It's freaking hot. It was like 90 degrees today in Kansas City, and it is almost October 1st, so I'm kind of sick of this. It's weird. The Sporting Portland game last night, I was talking with Zarek Valentin after the match, and he is like, dude, that was a hot game for almost October. I mean, it was 80, 85 degrees, you know, at kickoff in Kansas City, which is just kind of, it's not normally like that. It's been unseasonably warm out here. And so it kind of was dragging people out, and kind of forced last night, forced Gio Savarese, because of the game state, because of the heat, to not play Diego Valeri even the 20 minutes that he possibly could have played. Granted, of course, you all know about contract disputes, but Kansas City's been kind of weird lately. It doesn't feel like fall, but it's also I don't know. It also doesn't feel like fall because Sporting are not going to be in the playoffs. So we'll see. It's a weird feeling, right?
No,
I don't know if I like it.
I definitely hear you on that front, Dan. I want to say it was 87 degrees for the Rapids final home game yesterday
hot.
As well. Yeah, that's
I feel like hot that's hot in Denver for September.
Yeah, that's very hot for September. But then, you know, it was cool. You know, I went to Rocky Mountain National Park on Saturday, the day before, and it was their free day. So I went and did one of the big lake trails with one of my meetup hiking groups that I go hiking with all around the Rockies and everything, and it didn't get above 50 degrees, and the leaves were changing colors, and there was a little bit of mist, and you know, one little hailstorm, and you know, all the leaves were going to completely turn with the reds and yellows and hues and all the smells of fall. So you know, and meanwhile, isn't there a town randomly in Montana that got like its entire annual snow expectation in like one blizzard over the weekend? So weather's absolutely weird, folks. Climate's absolutely weird. That is fitting given that we are entering one of the many MLS silly seasons, and that will be the playoffs. So, Dan, let us start. Since last we podcasted, LAFC and New York City FC both clinched the, I'll say, the number one and the number two overall seed in the Supporters Shield standings. LAFC had already clinched the number one seed in the Western Conference several weeks back, but it was still mathematically possible for New York City FC to make a run at the Supporters Shield. That ended with an LAFC win against the Houston Dynamo this past weekend, and then New York City FC got a win against a hapless and Joseph Martinez-less Atlanta United team. And then even though New York City FC ended up losing to New England on the weekend, both Atlanta and Philadelphia, who were the number two and the number three seed, dropped points. So with that, LAFC has home field advantage all the way through the Western Conference. They have a bye in the first round of the playoffs, and they'll play in the conference semifinals, the conference finals, and then an MLS Cup if they get there. They will play all three of those games at home should they advance, and New York City FC will not have to leave Yankee Stadium prior to a potential MLS Cup. And if I'm not mistaken, just looking at the math, Dan, it looks like the only team that New York City FC would be playing on the road in an MLS Cup would be a Los Angeles Football Club. Dan, your thoughts on these two teams in their recent results that have clinched them the playoff rights that they've gotten, just overall the successful seasons that both of these managers and teams have had in 2019?
Yeah, I think LAFC have had a more obvious and straightforward path to this. to this number one seed spot. NYCFC, not so much. But if you look over it, those two teams have been some of the best. They play some of the best soccer. They're put together a little bit differently. You know, LAFC, you might say, kind of built around Carlos Vela and Carlos Vela pretty much. NYCFC tend to be a team that you can pick and plug players in and out of the system, and they still work. You've seen that in recent weeks with, you know, big-time players and Heber Araujo getting hurt and a few others. But that NYCFC team has been fantastic all season long. They really came on after a relatively kind of a mess start where they seemed to be dropping results here and there and not being able to close out games. And, you know, over the summer and the last half of the season, they came on really strong. LAFC have just been historically good. I'm not as surprised that LAFC came out on top as I am NYCFC coming out on top. If you remember how the end of their season went last year, it felt like NYCFC were kind of up in the air. You know, they get rid of, you know, there's no David Villa. Okay. They get rid of Jonathan Lewis. As you know, he's in Colorado. You know, there's a lot of faces and a lot of promise that was with that team. They bring in a lot of guys that not a whole lot of people know, with Keaton Parks. You bring in Heber Araujo, Alexander Mitrida. You know, some of these guys who were brought in to be studs, and they turned out to be studs. So what NYCFC have done is pretty impressive, just considering where they were last year, how they looked under Domi Torrent, and kind of the back and forth that Torrent was getting with a lot of media members. And he almost at one point seemed to be on the hot seat. And now they're sitting first in the Eastern Conference. So NYCFC's path, just not as expected as LAFC's, but still a deserved path to that number one seed, in my opinion.
Well said, Dan. I think definitely both of these managers deserve praise. You know, obviously, you know, Bob Bradley's been, you know, this was not in the sense that it's about to end, but a coming to fruition of a major project in terms of what he was able to accomplish in the midfield this year, on top of sustaining what the team had from a defensive standpoint, and certainly the attacking front as well. But, you know, I've been banging this drum all year. You know, the fact that Lee Wynn is on the bench because Edward Atuesta, who nobody ever heard of, you know, Latif Blessing, who I say was a good player, but nobody was expecting him to be what he has been in 2019. At least you could speak to that as far as his time with Sporting Kansas City. You know, and then obviously Marc-Anthony Kay, who is a bona fide, you could argue, the second best midfielder at times on a improved Canadian squad as well, has also been excellent as well. And so, you know, LAFC was an absolute juggernaut. You know, for about 2-3 months there, at the absolute least, they played some of the best and some of the prettiest soccer that I think we've seen in MLS, and rightfully so. They've commemorated that, you know, with a supporter shield, obviously with the goal on the weekend. I believe Carlos Vela got number 31, so breaking the record that Joseph Martinez scored this past weekend. And, you know, pending on what Zlatan Ibrahimovic and the Houston and the LA Galaxy are going to do, the Houston Dynamo this weekend probably locked up the Golden Boot, possibly. And for my money, at least, we've discussed this, you know, off and on, you know, the MVP as well. So that, I think, you know, certainly is a culmination to what they've accomplished. And so they've already won things to kind of commemorate and plant that flag, saying that they upped the ante from, you know, Atlanta and New York Red Bulls of yesteryear, and then Toronto FC, if we want to go back a couple of years as well. And this was just everybody firing on all cylinders, and Bob Bradley pulling all the you know, the right triggers, and, you know, they just everything came into fruition. I think I don't know about you, Dan, probably deserve to eat some crow regarding Dominic Torrent. You know, there was that incident I believe they played in the first game at Allianz Field when Minnesota United opened it up, and if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. there was some big wig with City Football Group who was in attendance for that. Dan, am I correct in that?
I believe so.
Okay, and Twelman was hyping on about, you know, maybe this was, you know, coming to check in to see on, you know, how one of the, you know, the children's ships was doing from the mothership, and, you know, maybe there were some questions about this team. And you know, we had some doubts about what this team was going to look like offensively with David Villa not being there. We knew what they had in the midfield, and they patched a couple of things in. You know, credit to Keaton Parks for, I think, certainly stepping in. Alexander Ring's been fantastic. He's probably the best D mid, you know, the best non-DP D mid in the Eastern Conference, to say the least. And then obviously that defense still has been there. Sean Johnson getting called up to, you know, the national team. The center backs that they have with Callens and Maxime Cheneau, you know, have always been really solid. solid. I still really like Ronald Matarrita, but, you know, there were questions about what this team was going to look like in terms of the attack without David Villa. And pretty much every single guy they brought in, Bear has been fantastic, you know, as a traditional number nine. Matarrita gets the hat trick against... you know, Atlanta United has played in a couple of different roles. And then Castellanos has kind of been, you know, maybe not a bigger figure in terms of production, but he's certainly been the one of the more clutch players on that team. And then, you know, when they need somebody else, Jesus Medina comes in as well. So they haven't replaced David Villa in the sense that there's no one player to plug in and fit into that entire system. But kind of like the Moneyball thing, Dan, if you remember where they're talking about how we can't replace Giambi and Johnny Damon's and the other guys, but, you know, maybe we can get a bunch of other players that kind of add up to them as far as getting on base. They haven't replaced, there's no single guy on New York City FC right now who's going to win MVP, who's going to challenge the, you know, other three big scorers in the league for the golden boot, but they brought in three or four guys who collectively over the course of the season can get you 25 to 30 goals. And they were guys who, you know, I don't think anybody outside of, you know, the New York City FC press corps was really hyping all that much, and they were somewhat unknowns. And the fact is, you know, this is Dominic Torrent's team now. And I think in hindsight, maybe we could go back and owe some mea culpas to the failings of last season was to a bit Dominic Torrent getting used to the league and also him having a team that worked for Patrick Vieira. Now, I think Patrick Vieira and MLS with Patrick Vieira's team is probably a better team than Domi Torrent's team, than Domi Torrent with his team in Major League Soccer. But, you know, I think they needed a little bit of time, and he needed to bring in his guys, and he brought in his guys, and it's working. And say what you will about Matias Almeida and every single other coach who goes into Yankee Stadium and ends up losing, the fact is that's where they're playing right now. That's where they're going to continue to play for the rest of the season, pending the Yankees playoff situation, and certainly going into 2020 as well. And Dominic Torrent has figured out how to assemble players with the roster rules and regulations as they are in MLS, and has gotten to play them to play very, very successfully, and he's adjusted to it, and they're deserving champions of the Eastern Conference regular season as far as I'm concerned. Any other things that we want to talk about with these two teams, Dan, or shall we head further down the Eastern Conference table?
I say we head further down the Eastern Conference table, goodness.
Okay, last week, listeners, we did not have playoff DEFCON ratings for the Eastern Conference because there was only one spot up for grabs, and it was the New England Revolution, and pretty much the Revs just needed a couple points, and Chicago needed to drop a game, and that was going to be good enough for the Revs to get it. And the Revolution are officially in, Dan. They are the seventh and final team into the Eastern Conference playoffs. They do have an opportunity with a couple of different scenarios to climb up there, though it does seem pretty unlikely with them on 45 points and the next team above them being Toronto FC with 47 points. Everybody just with one game to play with decision day on Sunday. But in any case, this was a team that was bottom of the Eastern Conference when Brad Friedel was dismissed. This was a team that did not look like they were very talented, that didn't have a whole lot of confidence. At one point, Brad Friedel was arguing that fans needed to potentially threaten violence towards some of his players in order for them to feel motivated and feel pressure in order to ultimately perform. And Bruce Arena comes in, he makes a couple moves, he tweaks a couple things, he simplifies stuff, he brings in Gustavo Bow, Carlos Hill continues to do his thing, the defense is patchworked together, but it seems to be working, and ultimately the Revs are back into the playoffs. Dan, your thoughts on just the wonky 2019 season they've had, and whether or not the Revs can make any noise in the playoffs this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Revs can make a bit of noise. You saw with their win at home against New York City FC. I don't know if they're necessarily built to be a contender this year. I think they're about one. I think they're probably one DP at a really good TAM signing away from being a legitimate contender in the Eastern Conference. But what we've seen from them so far has been kind of similar to the Rapids. The Rapids climbed to the top, or climbed to at least somewhat relevance. And I know we'll kind of get into that a little bit later on the Western Conference, but you know, they fire a manager that was clearly incompetent and had no idea what he was doing and did not know how to get the best out of what he had. And you know, now all of a sudden they've put themselves in, they've taken advantage of a weak Eastern Conference too. You know, Toronto FC, not great outside of really Philadelphia, Atlanta, and New York City FC. The Eastern Conference is just very meh. So you know, they have clearly been the shiny, I don't want to say shiniest of the turds in the Eastern Conference, because they are above turd level in the Eastern Conference, that's for sure. I know they're kind of sitting in the last playoff spot right now. But I think a lot of that, if, you know, let's say you give Bruce Arena the entire season with Gustavo Bo, I think the New England Revolution are pushing for a home playoff game. And if not, easily, pretty easily have a home playoff game locked up. So, you know, a down year in the Eastern Conference outside of the top three, New England has been able to take advantage of. And I think that's a big thing that they were able to do, which has put them into this chance for playoff contention and put them into the playoffs. And ultimately, they have a shot at MLS Cup. It's a very long one, but this is a Revs team that has been able to fight back from down many times this year, even under Friedel, and they can grind some results out on the road. So this is going to be a team that you kind of, I don't want to say you don't want to face, but at the same time, this is a team that's going to frustrate you if you are one of those home seeds in the final round or in the first round of the playoffs.
Well said, Dan. I think the first thing that Bruce Arena brought in, and we knew this was, you know, one of his top skills, is he just comes in and he calms everything into the room. He has that locker room completely on the same page. There's no cliques. There's no internal fighting. And if you're somebody who's going to cause one of those, Bruce Arena is going to trade you and you're completely going to regret it. We saw this with the Beckham experiment. You know, Bruce Arena coming in 2007, 2008, I believe, and it was just absolute chaos with the way Beckham was acting and his relationship with Landon Donovan and the rest of the team as well, and Bruce was able to push the right buttons and get everybody, you know, rowing in the same direction. And certainly, maybe not there was internal feuding amongst the Revolution in terms of there being cliques, you know, I'm not saying anything of Carlos Heel or any of the other more higher played players, but certainly, you know, that was a team that was in a lot of turmoil, that just wanted to hear a different voice that wasn't Brad Friedel and somebody who just wasn't absolutely grinding on them every single week. And Bruce Arena is absolutely that kind of personality. So he comes in, he calms things down, he simplifies a lot of things tactically, and he has a knack for getting value out of players, you know, that other teams haven't been able to get anything. You know, he's the guy who picks up somebody, you know, in the reallocation draft, for example, off the scrap heap that nobody would have been selecting, and he turns them into a bona fide contributor to an 18, or maybe even, you know, an occasional starter when somebody goes down on the way to making an MLS Cup. You know, I think of a guy like Dan Gargan, for example, who they got a lot of value out of, who nobody else in the league was going to take a chance on. And we saw, you know, I think an improved, maybe not in terms of offensive production, but just overall play from Diego Fagundes. I thought the defense was a lot better. I like what I've seen from Edgar Castillo. In terms of looking forward, I probably agree with you, Dan. If this team really wants to compete in the Eastern Conference, they probably need to lever another DP, maybe not as expensive or you know, with the pedigree of Carlos Heel or Gustavo Bob, maybe somebody else in there, maybe a TAM center back. I think there could be some decisions, you know, as far as the goalkeeper role and a couple of the center back personnel, that I think Bruce Arena will probably look to make decisions on that in the offseason. You know, I think Matt Turner has been really heroic at times for them, particularly in that game against the Portland Timbers that ended up getting them a result with the PK at the last minute. But I question whether or not, is that a turning point for Matt Turner, or has he just been outperforming, say, his existing pace? That's something that I assume Bruce Arena would think about heavily and probably make a very Patriots way decision about that one way or the other, especially now that he shares, you know, an office space with the one Bill Belichick in Foxborough at Gillette Stadium. So, but I think he's come in and he's been absolutely fantastic in what he's done. And the acquisitions they made have been really good. You know, I think Carlos Heel is probably, outside of, you know, 2-3 seasons with Lee Wynn, the best central attacking midfielder that they've ever had. And you know, I would say that Gustavo Bo, just from a pure talent standpoint, is probably the best striker that the New England Revolution have had in a single season, you know, since probably Clint Dempsey or Taylor Twellman going back in a day. So you add in a couple really impactful players and a coach who's exactly what the team needs, and they tweak a few things, they're going to be able to be extremely pragmatic and get results. I'm not really excited about this team's doing from a playoff standpoint, just because I think they're outmatched from a talent point standpoint or a cohesiveness standpoint against pretty much every single other team they're going to run into. And I think Gustavo Bo and Carlos Heel have been great, but I don't know that they're able to go on the road in a tough place to play against a good team that plays well at home in a one-game playoff game and single-handedly take over a game. I would say that an Alejandro Pozuelo or Jozy Altidore head-to-head against that duo from the Revs, the, you know, Toronto FC would win that. I would say that Wayne Rooney, assuming he doesn't elbow somebody in the face, would be able to do that. I would say that collectively of the Philadelphia Union. I would certainly say that of New York City FC, but I'm really excited to see from a progress standpoint what the Revolution are able to do in 2020. At this point, just making the playoffs, getting to relevance, I think, was the absolute minimum bar when Bruce Arena came in. I think punching the ticket to get into the playoffs, back into the playoffs for the Revolution. At this point, they're playing with house money. We'll see if they can make lives difficult for anybody else. Speaking of lives being difficult, Dan, let's jump over to the red line in the Western Conference. Five teams have clinched their playoff spots in the Western Conference, and there are still four teams that are mathematically capable of making the playoffs right now, Dan, which means for decision day, we've got two spots and four teams trying to get it, two of whom will be playing against each other. The Portland Timbers got a, did they win or did they draw that game against Sporting? They drew it. They drew it, Dan.
Yes,
and so that kind of put them in a position now where they're the most likely team to get into it. FC Dallas, you know, continues their skid off of their two draws 2 weeks ago to lose against the Colorado Rapids, just completely outplayed. One of the most fantastic performances I've seen from the Rapids against a good Dallas team and a desperate Dallas team that just was completely outmatched on the day, if you ask me. And then San Jose Earthquakes, Dan, you know, the red card against Seattle, and then Seattle ends up scoring in stoppage time as well. Just walk me through where these four teams are, and particularly with, you know, your familiarity having seen Portland on the weekend and seeing where the San Jose Earthquakes are. Just what's the psyche of these four teams, and how does this thing shake out on Sunday?
Yeah, I am curious to see how it all shakes out here. I don't have any confidence in the San Jose Earthquakes at the moment. If there's any team in this final group that I do have confidence in, it is the it's gonna be the Portland Timbers. Just from I know they drew with Sporting Kansas City on Sunday, but so far they look like the only team that's got any bit of confidence about them. And they've got a lot of quality to get the job done. I think San Jose's got quality to get the job done, but they don't look like they have confidence. Dallas looks like a mess. You saw that in person, over the weekend. I just don't know what to expect at the moment from them. And I just highly doubt, that Dallas has got anything with them. So I wouldn't be shocked. What's the scenario that Colorado gets in? How does it all have to shake out? Can Portland and Colorado both get in?
Yes, they can. So Colorado can't overtake Portland right now. So
right.
If Portland's missing the playoffs, it has to be Dallas and San Jose. So the simplest answer for you in terms of how the Rapids make the playoffs is the Rapids have to beat they have to win against LAFC. That's already a big thing. FC Dallas absolutely has to lose. There's no bones about it. If a Dallas gets a draw against Sporting Kansas City or a win, the Rapids are out no matter what anybody else does. Ideally, San Jose loses to Portland Timbers. In that case, Portland gets the sixth seed and the Rapids get the seventh seed. The Rapids can only jump up to seventh. Now, San Jose could draw Portland, in which case then the Rapids have to beat LAFC by at least two goals, because then San Jose and Colorado will both be tied on points. They'll be tied on wins. The Rapids would need to get to a negative one goal differential. They have a negative three goal differential in order for the next tiebreaker to be goals four. At that point, the Rapids have 57 goals and the San Jose Earthquakes have 51. As long as San Jose and Portland don't end up, you know, tying like 10-10 or something like that, a multi-goal victory for the PIDs at LAFC gets them the seventh seed. But so Dallas has to lose, San Jose can only draw, and the Rapids need to win by any means necessary against LAFC. If San Jose ends up drawing, then the Rapids need a multi-goal victory against LAFC. If Dallas gets a point, the PIDs are done. If San Jose wins, the PIDs are done.
Okay. So I think that all kind of still, like that, I genuinely wouldn't be shocked at this point if Colorado made it in. What does LAFC do? Do they kind of want to play, devil's advocate? And are they playing? Can they get the best record ever in the history of MLS, or do they already have that?
I believe that they already have that. I don't think anybody's gotten to, or no, didn't somebody get to 71 points?
I thought that was Red
Bull
last year.
Why don't you look that up, Dan, and then I've got some spiel to say. So look that up while I'm talking. So, you know, I agree with you, Dan, and I'll be honest, because of the situation, I'm not sure I have confidence in any of these teams. You know, maybe the one team I have confidence in right now is the Portland Timbers, partially because of their position. A lot has to happen in order for them to not make the playoffs, and they directly control their own fate because, you know, they've got a virtual six pointer against the San Jose Earthquakes. So that's beneficial in terms of they don't even have to worry about what Dallas or what the Colorado Rapids are doing. They can just focus on beating San Jose. And if they do that or get a result against San Jose, they're in. And so, you know, I think there was, you know, maybe some smallest or, you know, a moral victory in their draw against Sporting Kansas City over the weekend. But I mean, I they're going to show up at Providence Park on Sunday, and I'm fully expecting the San Jose Earthquakes to do something to implode or already be like an exploded electrode. When they already show up. So as long as the Portland Timbers don't like self-destruct themselves more than the San Jose Earthquakes are already self-destructing, having lost five in a row, getting another red card, being down a man and everything, this team looks completely gassed from the man marking and just the high intensity running that Matias Almeida has had them do all summer. Like, I've got to think that, you know, like the Portland Timbers are going to show up, and just by being less of a hot mess than the San Jose Earthquakes, that should be enough to get a result. That said, Dan, with describing the scenarios to you at this point, it would not shock me if any of these four teams make the playoffs or miss the playoffs at this point. That's just how wonky things are. But if there's anybody that I have faith in, it has to be the Portland Timbers because of what they were able to accomplish over the weekend and given the opponent that they're playing. You know, I don't have a whole lot of faith in FC Dallas right now, but they're also playing a struggling Sporting Kansas City side. But, you know, yes, it's another MLS Cup rival, and, you know, maybe there'll be some rallying of the troops, or Peter Vermees will put in all the kids who will just be excited to play, and they'll be able to outplay, you know, FC Dallas to that amount. But I have to imagine just single-handedly Diego Valeri, Sebastian Blanco, like them showing up, and eventually the San Jose Earthquakes against them are going to collapse of their own weight. So as long as the Portland Timbers don't collapse any further than they already have or more than San Jose on Sunday, they should be able to get a result in there, you know. I think Sporting Kansas City could give Dallas a real run for their money. The thing that really just concerned and befuddled me about Dallas seeing them on the weekend, Dan, is they didn't seem to have a plan in terms of going forward. They weren't really adjusting to what the Rapids were doing, and they didn't have any ideas in terms of creating anything offensively. You know, Andrasik didn't really get any service and didn't do a whole lot with it. Feria had a couple of opportunities, but, you know, for large stretches of the game, it was kind of, let's get to the final third and then we'll figure it out when we get there. And when you see a team that's resolute defensively like the Rapids right now, like I think Tim Melia and Matt Beisler are capable of being, it's really, really hard to do anything. Michael Barrios hasn't really looked good in this run. He did not have a good game at all against the Colorado Rapids. So I'm wondering who are FC Dallas from a mentality standpoint. I'm wondering what their plan is just from an attacking and a defending standpoint, because I didn't see a clear-cut game plan, you know, 2 weeks ago when they drew against Seattle and drew against New York City FC. I didn't see a clear game plan or a team that was on the same page against the Colorado Rapids. And if you look like that against Sporting Kansas City, and Sporting is doing anything but mailing it in, I think they could be able to get a result. You know, I think in terms of where these four teams are from a form standpoint, I think it's no doubt in my mind that Colorado are absolutely, you know, the best of the four. But, you know, just they dug a hole, you know, they've dug themselves pretty well out of a hole that was already one of the biggest holes in MLS ever to be potentially dug out of. So, you know, I'd have confidence in terms of how they're playing. You know, Tim Howard said in his post-game ceremony for his retirement with his last home game of the season that, you know, Robin has us playing like we could beat Barcelona right now. And I asked him in post-game, you said you could beat Barcelona. You think you could beat Liverpool? And he said, yes, absolutely, we could beat Liverpool. I think he jokingly said, let me put on an Everton kit for that one, and we're beating Liverpool at Anfield right now. So, you know, if you can beat Barcelona and you can beat Liverpool at Anfield, I've got to think you're going to be able to beat, you know, an LAFC team that's already looking at the playoffs at the bank. So I think they could absolutely get a result there, but the Rapids need the most help. And just, you know, I think, you know, I think FC Dallas could go in there and find their way to grinding out a 1-1 draw against Sporting Kansas City, you know, who will probably be mailing it in. But I mean, if the Rapids were in San Jose or Dallas's position, then I definitely have confidence in them making the playoffs. And if they were in Portland's position, hosting San Jose, had 46 points and everything, I think they'd go up against San Jose and they'd win that game 2-3-0 comfortably. And they'd punch their own ticket independent of what anybody else is doing. But I mean, you know, it's just, it's interesting with the teams that everybody's playing, how the schedule is shaking out right now. And there's so much stuff that can go on. I'm not really, I think anybody who's saying they know for certain how things are, what's going to happen and how the results are going to get clinched and everything, they're absolutely crazy. If there's anything this past weekend has shown us, is that MLS is absolutely insane, Dan. And I have no doubt that the MLS script writers are going to give us a very Game of Thrones, the shock ending on Sunday, one way or the other.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, man.
So what's up as far as the stat that we had on LAFC?
So LAFC, they do have the ability to have the best record in all of MLS history. If they are currently sitting on 69 points, which ties them with Atlanta last year and Toronto FC from 2018, New York Red Bulls last season have the all-time record for points in a regular season, which was 71. If LAFC win, that puts them at 72 points. And with their goal differential and their wins, I believe that would put them at the greatest, and the goals scored as well, would put them, you know, on paper, the greatest regular season MLS team.
Alrighty then, so we'll see. You know, I think we'll see pretty early on, does Carlos Vela start this game? Does Edward Atuesta start this game? What are they doing at goalkeeper? What are they doing as far as the outside backs and everything? You know, if both Perez's are starting in this one, then, and, you know, we don't see any of the DPs, for example, then I think it's pretty clear that, you know, they're treating that as an exercise. And, you know, certainly if Carlos Vela's playing, I'm wondering how long he actually goes, Dan. Is it kind of give him a run out just so he maintains his fitness for 45 or 60 minutes? So that'll be really curious to see how that happens. But, you know, we won't see it. We won't know any of that until we actually see the lineup. And obviously everybody else in that situation is going to have to go for it. Portland and San Jose playing each other. I guess from your standpoint, Dan, I'm curious how seriously, you know, with them already being eliminated, that Sporting Kansas City will take their final game of the season playing at Dallas.
They were already eliminated and they took it pretty seriously against Portland Timbers. They've got some guys that are still playing for stuff. Some guys that are potentially playing for jobs. You know, beyond this season, I would not be shocked if, you know, Christian Namath is playing for his job, considering the fact that he makes over $1 million. And, you know, on Sunday, he put in his first goal since April. So I think there's some stuff in there where players are still going to play for some personal pride. Sporting Kansas City, people should know they're just not a team, regardless, that's just gonna, regardless of how bad they've been this year, they're just not a team that's just gonna like roll over and play dead. That doesn't seem like who they are for the stretch run. You know, they're not necessarily in danger of getting the last spot in the Western Conference. If they had lost, they could have potentially been in that position, but I also don't see Vancouver winning this week either. So you know, Sporting Kansas City, I think, will take this more serious though. They've had a pretty healthy rivalry with FC Dallas over the last few years, and a chance on decision day to put FC Dallas out of the playoffs on their home turf. I think Sporting Kansas City might relish that.
Alrighty, that'll be something to look for, I guess, with that. Dan, anything else, or shall we head to Pick'ems with the Roundtable?
I say we head to Pick'ems.
All right, listeners, we'll only be doing pickups for ones that are relevant for the rest of the regular season. Obviously, the two number one seeds in each conference have been locked up, and there's still some jostling for playoff seeding, but, you know, nothing that's going to be too crazy. It's not like a team that's in fifth has a chance to go to third or anything like that. You know, we'll look at that and see. But we're going to focus on the four games that we were already talking about, because those are still the spots up for grab, and where I think this is where Team Chaos Chaos, I think, is going to occur on Sunday if Team Chaos does show up. All of these games, all the games for Decision Day, folks, will start at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Simultaneous kickoffs across the entire league. All 12 games, all conference plays. So Eastern Conference teams playing Eastern Conference teams, and then the Western Conference teams playing the Western Conference teams. So we will start in Southern California, LAFC hosting the Colorado Rapids. This will be on ESPN Plus for most of the country. Who you got and why, Dan?
So I'm going to go – shoot. I'm going to go with Colorado. Let's go full madness on this. I'll say Colorado wins this one 2-0 at LAFC, because LAFC may not feel like they need to go for everything on the final day, since they've got pretty much everything they could possibly wrap up wrapped up. Maybe they'll decide to wrap up Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi, and Brian Fernandez in is that Brian Fernandez? I don't know, whatever the new Uruguayan guy. They choose to wrap those guys in bubble wrap, then I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Rapids 2-1 in this one. I agree with you, Dan. You know, Tim Howard said after the game that he's going to move heaven and earth to be ready to play for the game on Sunday. And then he said, kind of cheat with a cheeky smile on his face, he said, you know, and if I'm not able to go, Clint will step in and get us to the playoffs. So, you know, I think Colorado's going to come in there and they're going to absolutely fight for their lives. Like, this is going to be the most keep fighting performance that is possible of a Colorado Rapids team that is not managed by Paolo Mascherini. I think LAFC is largely going to be in celebration mode. I don't think Bob Bradley's going to risk Carlos Vela or Diego Rossi or Edward Atuesta or Tyler Miller in this one. So, you know, give me Colorado Rapids by a score of 2-1, possibly 2-0, like you said, Dan, against what is effectively, you know, an Orange County Los Angeles football club. Let's head out to Dallas, Dan. FC Dallas hosting Sporting Kansas City on ESPN Plus for most of the country. Who you got and why?
I'm going to go Sporting Kansas City in this one. I say 2-1.
Okay, I'll take a 2-2 draw on this one, or we'll go 1-1 in this one. You know, I think at some point FC Dallas is going to have to try and figure something out, and I just wonder, you know, either with weird legs or rotation of the squad, you know, you said that Sporting Kansas City isn't going to lay down in this one, but it's not like Peter Vermes is going to treat this game like it's going to be MLS Cup, and this game is effectively MLS Cup for FC Dallas. And so, you know, as long as they're able to get it spelled right with two L's at the beginning of their game, then I think that they'll walk out with at least a draw in this one. It will not be pretty. I don't think it'll be very convincing. I have almost no faith in FC Dallas going into the playoffs, but I think it'll be enough for them to get a draw, you know, against the Sporting Kansas City side that's probably very much looking forward to taking a break and probably spending some time on a beach in October. And then we'll finish that off, Dan, with Portland Timbers hosting the San Jose Earthquakes. This will be on ESPN. This is the big nationally broadcast game, folks, along with, if I'm not mistaken, it's, is it New England Revolution and Atlanta United, Dan? Let me check that real quick. No, I think it's just Portland and San Jose.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just Portland and San Jose. Okay, in any case, the one nationally televised game, unless you're in Canada and then watching the various Canadian teams on the various TSNs. Dan, who you got and why?
I am going to go with I'll probably take Portland in this one. I say it's 2-1, and it's a late winner for the non-suspended Brian Fernandez. I think that red card gets overturned as well.
I think that red card gets overturned as well. I don't know that we'll see Diego Valeri in this one just because of what we've seen with him being on the bench and all the rumblings about his contract negotiations. And then you saw what happened with the Timbers Army at the last home game, right, Dan?
Yes.
Okay, so somebody tweeted out, I believe it's a capo for the Timbers Army, Dan. Portland Timbers go out, they have their game, it's a 2-2 draw against the New England Revolution, and then Diego Valeri comes over to the capo stand and is shaking hands with a couple of fans and everything and basically says goodbye and walks away. And that was kind of weird as far as timing was concerned, given that there was one more home game, and obviously they were still in the hunt for the playoffs at that point, but that's ominous when you're saying that with that much season left. I'm really wondering whether or not Diego Valeri's just checked out on this team, given that the front office isn't willing to pay him his money or whatever is going on with his agent and the negotiations and the rumblings about the contract option that he has for 2020. That doesn't sit well with me. So, you know, much like FC Dallas, even if they make the playoffs, I have almost no faith in them I definitely don't have faith in them if they're not going to be able to play at Providence Park. But, you know, again, the Santa, you know, this is a battle of, you know, it's a game of battleship where two teams are already sinking and you don't need to do anything to further sink their battleship. You just need to stay afloat for slightly longer. I've got to think a D-red carded Brian Fernandez is enough to do that, and it'll be a 1-0 victory for the Portland Timbers. I don't think this will be a fun game in the sense that it'll be chaos. I don't think it'll be well-played soccer. It will definitely be two teams that are not at their peak and two teams that will definitely be missing major players. Diego Valeri, I probably cap, you know, the number of minutes he plays at 25 for the whole of this game, assuming that he's even within the 18. So, you know, it's going to be a shaky game, but I think just enough for the Timbers to breathe a sigh of relief and then probably get knocked out by Minnesota in the first round. That does it for us as far as the major stuff that we have, Dan. Do you have any last words? And where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at SperryDaniel94. Last words, just enjoy this last little bit of MLS soccer, folks. I don't have a whole lot of it left, sadly. But, man, it's been a wild season. It's shaping up to be a wild decision day for the Western Conference. Kind of enjoy, if your team's out of it, enjoy this last little bit of MLS craziness. Because if your team's out of it, guess what? We've got it. One heck of a long off season ahead of us. I was talking with Sporting KC's media staff about it. We're looking at 5 months before we get another MLS match. 5 months if you're eliminated from the playoffs right now, almost. So, you know, it's going to be a long one for you non-playoff teams, but luckily that's less than half of the league. So less than half of the league, you know, you got a long 5 months ahead of you. Everyone else, you got, you know, maybe three if you can make it far enough in the playoffs. But this one's going to be an interesting one on decision day, and just get ready, because now the games from here on out, every single game is a must win. I think that's going to create some incredible displays of soccer you know, through the rest of the season.
That was me giving a round of applause for Tim Howard, Dan. Obviously, presumably, it would have to be, the Rabbits would have to make the playoffs, and then they would have to get to MLS Cup, and they'd have to play the New England Revolution, but the Rebs would have to lose this weekend, and that is the only scenario in which it's possible for the Rapids to play another home game the rest of this season. So probably the last time that I'll be seeing Tim Howard play soccer in the flesh, and certainly the last time that he'll be playing at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. So, you know, absolute fantastic career for him. Obviously, most of his hay was made with the United States national team and Everton, and you know, we can banter all we want about whether or not he was worth the money that the Rapids were paying him, and was it mostly a business decision with the, you know, long rumored you know, necessity of signing Tim Howard in order for them to get the Transamerica shirt sponsor, which, by the way, Dan, is conveniently up at the end of this season. Wonder how those two things are correlated. So, you know, all the Tim Howard memories that most of us may have might not be with him in Burgundy, but, you know, he was a consummate professional with the Colorado Rapids. It was fantastic getting to cover and getting to talk to him. One of the best interviews and one of the best soccer minds, certainly, you know, in the history of American soccer. For my money, the best goalkeeper, at least so far in the history of the Federation. And, you know, depending on how you want to argue with him and Clint Dempsey and with whatever time Michael Bradley or Jozy Altidore, you know, have left, possibly one of the best American soccer players, if not the best in American soccer history. And, you know, I hesitated to say this, Dan, because even though I wanted to report it from a reporting information standpoint, I didn't necessarily want to raid on the parade or be the bad guy at the end of the week. But I was at training on Wednesday and on Thursday last week for the Rapids. Tim Howard was doing all of his usual drills and everything, and then he stops and he goes over and talks to the training staff for about 20 minutes and basically limps all the way from the main training practice field that they have all the way down to the locker room that they have on the north side of Dick's Sporting Goods Park. If you look overall on the map, Dan, it's Field 20, which is straight due east on the other side of the main pavement parking lot that they have where all the dead prairie dogs are now, and underground. And so he was just limping off, and I'm like, I really feel bad for him. The last game that he had played in prior to the game on Sunday would have been the one at Red Bull Arena. The Rapids got a win in that. That was Robin Fraser's first game, his return to the New York Red Bulls. You know, Tim Howard's obviously pending an MLS Cup at Red Bull Arena, his last game that he'd be playing at home against New Jersey, against the club that he started, his first game with the New York Metro Stars was actually against the Colorado Rapids, so you get a 2-0 win. He was man of the if he wasn't man of the match, it's because Jonathan Lewis had a brace in that one, but made a bunch of fantastic saves and basically just limped off with his calf, just completely exhausted after that game, to a round of applause from the South Ward and everything. And, you know, not saying that I didn't want to see him play again, but I thought that would have been a fantastic and very poetic bookend to his overall career, starting in New Jersey, ending in New Jersey, starting against the Rapids, ending with the Rapids. And, you know, he was limping and he was doing a lot of stretching, and I was wondering, was he actually going to start? And the lineout came out and said, okay, he was starting, let's see how well he can play. And he had a great save against Freya. You know, he had a great touch with a little dink over the ball from Ryan Hollingshead that Howard had to take a step to adjust in it, and then kind of fell backwards and tipped it wide of the far post. You know, it wasn't impressive or pretty for much of the 90 minutes, but you had a couple of key moments in there where Tim Howard was looking like vintage Tim Howard that you've seen with the United States men's national team, with Everton, and it was just really, really good to see that one last time. And, you know, here's to hoping that he's able to give it a go on Sunday and, you know, give the Rapids, you know, a hashtag keep fighting chance against Los Angeles Football Club. Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter at LWS Matt Pollard. Check out all of our content on lastwordonsoccer.com, at lastwordsc at all social media platforms. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Just search LWS Radio or Last Word on Sports, and we're usually the first thing that comes up into those very podcasts. Podcatcher entities. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. Listeners, we'll see you next week to recap the Decision Day Madness and preview the first round of the playoffs, and also talk about some US national team stuff as they've got more games to play. We'll see you then.